Welcome to The Catholic Arsonist.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. All right, can we just dive on in?
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to the Catholic Arsonist podcast. And we are joined today by a dear friend of mine, Allie, who... I'm sorry, I dropped the camera. She's here because she's somewhat of an expert. Would you say that?
Well, I don't know if I'm
she's an expert. in natural family planning, specifically the Creighton method, whatever. And this is something that's been on Shayna's mind a little bit to say, like, okay. It has been. To actually talk about this topic and open up the conversation because it's often so taboo. Mm-hmm. Most things that revolve around sex in the Catholic Church, it's like, let's
not talk about it.
Yeah. See no evil, speak no evil, and then just leave it there. But, you know, there's a lot of folks who... There's like silent suffering amidst all of this stuff. But then also I'm just totally convinced that natural family planning is absolutely part of the good news. And I think more people need to hear it. So that's why we brought Allie on. So Allie, tell everybody hello.
Hello. I'm excited to be here. I love podcasts and I love NFP. So
it's the perfect combination.
Pretty much my jam.
So Allie and I have known each other freshman year of college or sophomore year. I would
in
go
college.
Yeah, in college. I would go up to Rockhurst to visit my friends while I was in seminary over fall break, and I met Allie, and I think it was freshman year because I didn't have a car. A buddy had dropped me off at Rockhurst, and then Allie had to take me to daily mass.
Nice. And
resurrection, they had that
visitation.
Yeah. So I got to know Allie in college, and I told Shayna and Alyssa. Alyssa's just listening in.
She might get a
celebrity shot every once in a while. I was telling them when we were in college, Allie and I had one of these like knockdown drag out conversations about dreams, and Allie's were way more defined than mine were. And basically she wanted five things. You remember? She wanted to graduate from college. She wanted to pass their nursing boards or whatever.
Yeah, I'm a nurse, so we did say that.
She wanted to get married, she wanted to have children, and then she wanted to become an NFP counselor. And then she did all of that within 5 years. So life plans are complete. No more ambitions. But I have to tell you, like, the Lord hears your prayers and the desires of your
heart.
That's
true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm always impressed by
that. He placed them very clearly on my heart, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I graduated from Rockhurst and I studied nursing and philosophy, and then I became a nurse, and then I got married, then I had a child, then I became an NFP instructor, and then I had another child.
The most annoying, it's just not annoying, but it's amazing. I moved to Rome and was gone for 2 years, didn't come back to America. And in that time, Allie met her husband like for the first time and got married before I ever even returned to the States.
True. It was like 14 months from the time we met to the time we got married. So
Yeah, they're really special. And they have two boys.
Yeah. Louis is 2.5, and then Ambrose is 8 months.
8 months. They're doing all right?
They're doing great. Ambrose is really trying to crawl, and he's just not getting very far, but he really...
Pretty soon.
Yeah, very soon. Like any day. So.
Okay.
It's one of those things, you're really excited for them to crawl, and then you're like, oh no, you're going everywhere.
Right.
And I can't do anything with you crawling everywhere. But
true.
It's super fun.
Good. Shayna, thoughts?
I remember that stage, and I remember saying, they would just come over to me, I just push them down. Nope, not yet. Not yet.
Not yet. You're not allowed to walk.
No crawling, no walking.
Exactly. Then I lose all of my freedom mm-hmm. that I may have had.
So this is kind of a big topic. There's a lot of ways that we could go about it. I want to begin by asking what your first exposure to natural family planning was. When? High school or what?
Yeah, I think high school youth group. I was really just like fascinated by the idea. I think I read a lot. I was like a Catholic nerd in high school. So I went to all the Steubenvilles, read everything I could get my hands on. I think I just came across it through that, just theology of the body and then what that looks like. And then in my head, I was like, oh, if I want to be a nurse, maybe a nurse would be able to do that. So it kind of all the way back in my very early college, late high school, I was like, that seems like a good bridge for me of medicine and ministry. So that was kind of my first thoughts. And I felt pretty called to marriage. So the idea always was extra like fascinating. How would this work in a marriage? So,
okay. Did they teach you into Incarnate Word? Academy. Did they teach it there?
I think we briefly covered it. We did not go into like specifics or anything like that, but more, I would say through like youth group avenue was more how I heard about it.
You think high schoolers should be exposed to it?
I think it's really good for young women to know what's going on in their body. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good for all young people to know how family planning is possible and complementary to what the church teaches. So I don't know if they need to know, well, I don't know if young men need to know specifics. I think it's great for young women to know what's going on in their body. There's so much to know even in high school. But I definitely think learning the philosophical, moral arguments for why NFP is good is great in high school.
I jumped the gun and I introduced it to the eighth graders this year.
Maybe eighth grader. I think it might go over their head a little bit.
Well,
but
it totally did. But I also, listen, this whole year I've been following a book that Life Teen produces for eighth graders. And it's like supposed to be like a textbook. It's called 100 Things. And I definitely wanted to get to like some of the big moral issues at the end, which included things like euthanasia, the death penalty, abortion, and contraception. And I'm like, those are big topics, but you know, like they should at least be aware of them. But I wasn't going to cover birth control and contraception if I wasn't going to be able to tell them about natural family planning. And I think that's just like, that is so much the conversation, especially in high school, like all that young women really know is contraception. And they get started on it early. And then natural family planning, they may never be introduced to it unless they are married in the Catholic Church and they have to do a 1-hour training session with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard like some people argue that calling it natural family planning suggests that it's exclusive for the family planning phase, whereas calling it like fertility awareness based methods, that could be more applicable to anyone and more maybe applicable even to the high school students or things like that. Right. But yeah, it doesn't make sense to talk about why contraception is wrong without saying this is what is right to do. So totally.
So even if people aren't planning to have a family soon, you would still set them on this trajectory?
I think it's great to know about, I mean, like God gave women specifically, I'll just talk about, because natural systems by necessity have to be based on the times of fertility and infertility in the woman, because men are always fertile.
Always fertile.
So women are less fertile only at specific times during the month. So to know, like God made our beauty, our bodies complicated and beautiful. And so it's good to know what's going on and to be able to just like from a health perspective, like to be able to advocate for yourself so that your doctor doesn't say, well, the pill is the only thing we've got for you. Cause that's not true. And that's not, well, this is a little harsh, but it's not good medicine to say that's the only thing because it's not the only thing. So it's good to be able to advocate for yourself, to know what's going on in your body and to be able to appreciate the ways like God made women very beautiful ways and how he made, biologically speaking, how we're made to reproduce in a beautiful way. And I forget what your original question was. I'm sorry.
Keep going. Tell me how beautiful I am. So like knowing, when you say like knowing their bodies, women's bodies, like that they would know, what exactly does that mean as far as, so you're an expert, as I said, in the Creighton method. So like, how would a woman learn more about her body, you know, that way.
Sure. So, yeah, as Father Andrew said, I teach the Creighton model fertility care system. So this is mainly what I know. And with our system that we teach, we exclusively observe cervical mucus. So you observe it all the time, basically, and then you chart it. And there are different things you can see and know about your body based on what you're observing. So you check the biomarkers, you write them down, and then you can see different patterns. So to know what those patterns that would be potentially be something to get checked out by a doctor, to know what's just normal and healthy, and that cervical mucus is not a problem, but is a good thing. And ovulation is a good thing. And normal periods are a good thing. So just be able to know what's going on. You have to learn a system to be able to read those biomarkers and then chart them appropriately to be able to see what's going on.
Does that go beyond just like knowing when you're fertile or infertile? Is it associated with mental health or things like that, or physical health?
Yeah, definitely. With the Creighton model, the medical side of that was born NAPRO technology. So with
natural procreative technology.
Yep. So there are physicians, and we have lots here in St. Louis. We're very, very blessed that are trained to read Creighton model charts. They're trained to know what to look for, to see what would be treated. They can time when to check hormone levels. Because, as I said, women are complicated. Our hormones are not the same at every time in the month, but they're very specific to different days in the cycle. Mm-hmm. So the Creighton chart helps you to time hormone levels. It helps you to naturally replace those hormones if deficient. It can help you to detect if your cycles are really irregular, possibly a sign of PCOS. Mm-hmm. If you have, you mentioned the mental health, like extreme PMS is not normal. Like, you're not just supposed to live with these things as women, but we're just not supposed to have extreme pain with periods, super severe PMS symptoms. These are things that need to be checked out and looked at. And a lot of doctors, a lot of OBGYNs would just put you on the birth control pill, which is not going to help any of those problems, but it might suppress some of your symptoms temporarily. So a NAPRO doctor can look at those things, can look at your hormone levels. If you have endometriosis, there's a certain very specific surgical technique to take care of that. Mm-hmm. I also work in a NAPRO physician's office, so that was my other job didn't mention.
We'll get there.
But like, these things are not necessarily normal that women should just live with, but these are things that can be treated in a holistic way to improve quality of life for women, and then to also impact your fertility, whether now or in the future, depending on where you're at in your family planning life.
And that's kind of what you're talking about with, like, it's just bad medicine to put a Band-Aid on all of these symptoms and say it's good.
Yeah. Why? Or to say it's just part of being a woman, which it's not, to be in extreme pain.
Thank you. That's great.
I eye rolled, but you couldn't really see it. But yeah.
But so, like, what is this trend with OBGYNs? Like, why is that? They're getting paid by something? Like, I don't understand.
Well, again, I am not an expert in this, but from what I know is that
poster child.
A lot of studies are done because of money, and pharmaceutical companies have a lot of money, and they want to promote their product. They want to promote their drugs. So a lot of studies have been done on birth control. That's one issue, is that it's hard to get funding when you're not funding something that's going to stimulate the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
Additionally, a lot of medical schools, if almost none, teach that fertility awareness-based methods are legitimate, which is also just like a problem in the culture of medicine. So it's almost not their fault. They come out of medical school and they don't know that these exist. They don't think they're actually effective, and they don't know the biomarkers to look for, and they don't know the signs. And they really just don't know a ton about the woman's cycle, even if that's their specialty, because the birth control pill is put on it and it dictates the cycle rather than letting the body dictate when you supplement hormones. So
hence the natural.
Yeah. Natural procreative technology.
Yes.
Which, and it's not natural in the fact that, I mean, there is surgery. So surgery isn't necessarily like natural, but it is working cooperatively with the body to remove the problem to improve outcomes.
Sure. I was talking to a nurse in the parish. She's about our age, and I think she works on a stroke unit. And I told her that we were having this conversation, and she said, like, we see a lot of older people on our floor, but she says we also see a number of young women in their 20s and 30s. And they said the only traceable thing to why they would be experiencing a stroke is because they were on the pill. And so she said every nurse on her floor went off the pill.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it puts you at high risk for blood clots, which was an interesting conversation, like when they're like, oh, the vaccine.
The Johnson & Johnson.
It was one, blood clots.
In one in 1 million. Yeah, like 1 in 1 million chance that you would get a blood clot. But it's with birth control,
exponentially higher.
It's like 1 in 1,000 that you would get a blood clot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's bad medicine.
Yeah.
I think if nothing else, like, I'm super convinced by that. It's just, it's masking symptoms.
Yeah, and it and might not take
treating
care
the root
of,
problem.
Might take care of symptoms in the short term, but it's not taking care of any of the problems in the long term.
Yeah. And when used specifically to avoid conception, to avoid pregnancy, this is absolutely, like, part of the culture of death, right? Where it's like, I'm avoiding some evil that I don't desire, which is like a child, right? So that's like a huge component of this. Like in the conversation around contraception is like, basically you're treating a child as something that's not a gift from the Lord. It's something that you have to bear the burden of, right? So, I mean, that's why people use birth control. It's why it's called that. But natural family planning works both ways in that it helps couples achieve fertility and also avoid pregnancy. Can you give us, because this is, I think, a tough thing for people. It's like, well, what's the difference between NFP and using it contraceptively? What do you have thoughts?
Yeah. Well, if you're using a natural system, you're not using contraception. So that in and of itself makes you always open to life.
There's never a barrier that's introduced.
No, there's never a barrier. You're just timing. You're using timed active intercourse. So you're going to avoid intercourse.
That is such a niche phrase. Timed. Say it again.
Yeah. Fertility focused intercourse. So you're either going to use it to achieve a pregnancy at certain times of the month, or you're going to just time intercourse at times where you are pretty darn sure you're not fertile. But there's never a barrier. You're always open to the possibility that conception could occur.
That's amazing.
Even though there's like a 0.5% chance.
Yeah.
So using a system well.
So run us down some of those stats, like especially for a couple, let's say newly married, trying, like, we need to get our feet on the ground.
Trying to avoid a pregnancy.
Trying to avoid
That's
pregnancy.
That's the lingo.
Trying to avoid.
TTA. That's the abbreviation.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah. Trying to avoid?
Trying to avoid or trying to conceive, so like TTA or TTC. That would be like on the internet.
This couple is TTA. So, what was my question?
TTA. The effectiveness?
Yeah, the effectiveness of natural family planning.
Yeah, so I only know the specifics for the Creighton model system, but in perfect use of the system, it's 99.5% effective. And then in typical use, that would be your average user, it's 96.4% effective. So very effective, very comparable to other contraceptive methods on the market.
Yeah.
So it is a very legitimate option to use to avoid a pregnancy. That being said, you have to have an instructor for any method that you choose. Natural family planning is not something you DIY.
That's going to be my next question. So how would someone get started then and have only that 99.5? I can just imagine.
Yeah.
Nice.
So if you're ideal, in the most ideal world, if you're engaged, that would be the time to learn. You can get the observation routine down. You can get charting down. You can work with your instructor if your chart needs any management. That is like the most ideal of situations. But it's okay to learn at any time. I have lots of couples that I teach who are already married. We have different protocols in place, but really the key to gaining quick confidence is meeting with your instructor and following the instructions. So I know for Creighton, we meet with you every 2 weeks for the first 4 visits and then extend it out from there. But meeting with your instructor, if any method you use, is going to be key to getting that full effectiveness. And I would really advise against comboing methods. Like, pick a method, stick with it, because that's what's been studied on that method, and that's mm-hmm. what works for that.
At some point, though, you would not need an instructor, right? Or do you always need...
Typically for like, so once you get, for Creighton, we follow you relatively closely for the first year.
Okay.
After that, just every 6 months to every yearly basis, depending mm-hmm. on what's needed. But if you achieve a pregnancy, we like to do pregnancy evaluations to look at when you conceived and when is your expected due date and those kind of fun questions. And then also after you have a baby, postpartum NFP is very different than before you have a baby. So I would highly recommend for any method, you touch base probably multiple times with your instructor because it's a whole new ballgame, different hormones, different patterns. Often breastfeeding will suppress ovulation, so you're anticipating when you're going to start ovulating again. Mm. And it's not the same. It's actually very, very different depending on the person. So
sure. And now that we've already touched on that there's different methods, you want to run down some of those just to name them so that people are aware?
Sure. I know in our archdiocese, we have 5 that we have instructors for. So Creighton, which is what I teach, Marquette, Billings ovulation, couple-to-couple, and Symptothermo method. And there are other methods. FEM is another one. I don't think we have any instructors here in St. Louis, but especially with the pandemic, almost all teachers do distance learning. So,
kind of convenient.
Yeah, convenient for the user for sure.
Yeah. Thoughts, Shana?
No. I'm just looking at it online. It looks like a lot of them are similar, but I can't think of, why are there so many?
Yeah, different methods. Well, I really would encourage, obviously, from a Catholic's perspective, we just want you to be using a natural method. And I would encourage you to use the method that works for you, because if the way you observe, et cetera, for the different methods is something that works with you, it's going to work because then you're actually going to be doing the observations and you're going to be marking it down. Mm-hmm. So some look at just mucus, some look at temperature shift, some use a monitor to detect an LH surge in addition to
LH.
That would be like the luteinizing hormone. It's the hormone that spikes at the time of ovulation.
Wow.
So yeah.
Luteinizing
hormone. Do you want the details of why it's yes. called that?
Let's do it. Here we are.
Okay. Well, so when you are gearing up to ovulate, there's a follicle, which is like a cyst-like structure on your ovary.
It protects the egg.
The egg is contained within it. So the egg is one cell, so you can't just like see it. The follicle at the time of ovulation gets to about 2 centimeters in size. So just for reference, the time of ovulation, the follicle ruptures and the egg is released. And then what remains of the follicle becomes, it's called the corpus luteum, which is just Latin for yellow body because it appears like a yellow body. That's what it looks like. But the follicle primarily responsible for estrogen, and then the corpus luteum primarily responsible for progesterone. So estrogen's your pre-ovulatory hormone mainly, and then progesterone's mainly your post-ovulatory hormone. So luteinizing hormone causes
luteinizing.
It spikes right before the time that the follicle ruptures.
Is that the name of the hormone?
Mm-hmm.
It's not estrogen.
Well, we're really getting into the weeds here. There are 4 main hormones involved in ovulation. There's follicle stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, estrogen, and progesterone.
And could an APRO doctor determine which of the hormones somebody would be low in if they were having trouble conceiving of those 4?
Yeah. They do a full hormone profile. They look at what your estrogen and progesterone are, especially after you ovulate. They could look at it all the way through the cycle. It's a lot of blood draws, but it's very helpful information to know what is going wrong.
Right. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you bring that up because... I didn't realize that there was another way to help infertility besides just like getting like IVF shots. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to know, like, with NFP, there's all this other stuff.
Yeah, NAPRO technology really provides an amazing resource of a pro-life alternative to IVF or IUI. I think so many couples that I've worked with and or just talked to in general who are experiencing infertility, it's a really silent cross. People don't know. And if your doctor is only telling you this is the only option, I mean, we want to trust our doctors. So it's not, I think it's hard. So it's really amazing to be able to get the word out that NAPRO technology exists. And even here in St. Louis, we have an infertility and surgery specialist who just does this with NAPRO. So
do you know him? Well,
I know him. I work for him. This isn't a plug. He'll be happy for a little commercial.
Yeah,
Dr. Gavin Putoff at Veritas Fertility and Surgery. So
tell me some of the things that he does. I mean, he's only receiving couples. Note, it's like couples who are infertile. It's not just like the woman's burden. I think that's a huge part of this conversation is that whatever you're dealing with NFP, it's not like it's the woman's problem.
Takes two to make a baby.
Takes two to tango. So, a couple is infertile, right? It's not just the woman. So when couples who are experiencing infertility come to Dr. Putoff's office, what happens after that? Like, what is he?
Typically, we get referrals. So they're trying to, if it's an infertility patient, we usually get a referral from their OBGYN to say, like, I don't know, what I've got in my toolbox isn't working, so we need a specialist. So they'll come. Like, what are you asking? What does he typically look at?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a couple who's coming in and saying, like, we'll do IVF if we can't figure this out. So how do we figure out how to conceive?
Yeah, he does everything he can to ensure conception. So with NAPRO technology and using Creighton, there's up to an 80% success rate in helping a couple who's experiencing infertility to achieve pregnancy.
80%?
Up to. I mean, it depends on the situation. Wow. But that's including medical and surgical treatments, using fertility timed intercourse, and over the course of like 8 to 12 months. So not an immediate thing. But yeah, we look at hormone levels. We'll look at ovulation. Is surgery for endometriosis necessary? Like with PCOS, is the woman ovulating? They'll look at male factor infertility.
Yeah.
In a morally licit way. So
cool. That is amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors. I mean, I think there's essentially like 6 main ways that infertility could be presenting itself.
Okay.
So that's really going to put me on the spot to remember.
Well, the other thing, it's not like couples that would have a miscarriage. They're not infertile.
Well, that's another type of patient. We do see patients who have recurrent pregnancy loss. So if you have more than 2 miscarriages, there's a whole workup to look into as to why you might be miscarrying.
Right. Okay.
So that's like another patient we would see.
And he's able to address a lot of those issues.
Oh, yeah. He's able to do a lot of that. I hope he doesn't listen to this. I feel nervous. He probably won't. He's a busy guy.
I won't tell him. He's busy creating an amazing website.
He does have an amazing website, Veritas Fertility and Surgery. Boom. Everything he would treat is on there. He spent a lot of time writing it up.
So. Yeah, it's great. It's been a helpful resource even for me.
And it's just an amazing, not very many cities have access to this. So we're so blessed in St. Louis to have a specialist in this. So
Yeah. One thing I want to, Shane is going to fire off questions. Is that right? But one thing I want to talk about. And actually, even last week, I was doing marriage prep with a couple that, not positive, but I'm pretty sure that they're contracepting. And they had done their 1-hour-long instruction with on natural family planning with a nurse like yourself. And I think they were interested by it, but then they weren't like sold on it. And I try to talk it up, but like it's up to their own discernment. But I just share with them my thoughts on natural family planning. I had shared with them like, and nobody ever thinks that they're a statistic, but I had shared about the divorce rates between a couple that practices contraception, which aligns mostly with the majority of society, about 50%, you know, not 50% of contracepting couple. Is that right?
I think the general divorce rate is close to 50%.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, they don't look at if they're contracepting or not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think...
But most couples are contracepting,
it's
so...
It's true. But then with couples that practice natural family planning, it's somewhere hovers around like 5%. So that's like, I think that's a good bellwether of like a healthy system that isn't just something that's biological. And what I tried to speak to this couple about is like, there are forms of intimacy that are developed between a couple that's practicing natural family planning compared to one that isn't. So for example, once again, it's a couple that's fertile or a couple that's infertile. And that doesn't mean that everything falls on the woman, which necessitates some form of communication, especially about your bodies with each other. Like, you have to be on the same page. And it's like, that's already a form of intimate conversation that you're having.
Totally.
As a couple. And another, this is the other thing, and I'm big on, I think it's super important that we as individuals build virtue. And in a system, if not a system, but when you're using contraception, there's no sense of building virtue as far as like engaging in sex, because you can do it kind of whenever you want, however you want. And there's no temperance necessary. There's no real chastity isn't developed. You don't necessarily gain self-control. But those are all virtues that I would hope we as humans develop over time that would be required if we're going to do a healthy form of natural family planning. Which, like, it's not just abstinence, but it will be abstinence for a certain period of time so that you grow in temperance, you grow in self-control, and you develop new forms of intimacy with your spouse during your fertile periods when you don't desire to conceive, you know? And there's always, and this is, it has to be a spiritual component to it that has a reverence for life. There's always this openness to life and to God's good gifts that I think are good. So good for the soul. So in my little diatribe to this couple, they were kind of convinced by the, kind of the forms of intimacy.
Totally. I mean, using a natural system, you have, yeah, as you said, the husband ideally is learning everything that's going on. The wife is communicating. So we always say, like, the woman observes, the man supports the woman in that observation, mm-hmm. but the couple uses the system. They mm-hmm. ideally are communicating daily about where they're at in their cycle. They are communicating on whatever time frame that seems right for the couple. Like, are we trying to achieve? Are we trying to avoid? Mm-hmm. I know for my husband and I, it worked out when we first got married that we're like, okay, let's just decide at the beginning of the month. Are we going to use this month to avoid? Are we going to use this month to conceive? And then go from there and then have that conversation kind of on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. And to decide like when you're going to be discerning, it's the couple discerning rather than the woman or the man in the most ideal sense.
Right.
And really, we feel very passionately that this system is used in a holistic sense. So we want the couple to be engaging in all those special things, that special graces they get as a married couple, all those intimacies, whether it's spiritual, physical, emotional, intellectual, creative, all those different areas. Because there will be times when you're trying to avoid a pregnancy, and during your fertile window, you can't necessarily have that same expression of love that maybe you're used to. Sure. But there are still so many things that you can share unique to your married relationship that mm-hmm. is super special and important and really helps to get to know each other in that more holistic sense. Like, we're not just our bodies, so.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it.
And it's like a safeguard. It's like to help us love more selflessly. I had a doctor once tell me, he's like, NFP just helps us to love more like Jesus. Like, we can't just have all our selfish desires satisfied when we want. Mm-hmm. By the nature of this, like, guardrail, mm-hmm. even if that's what we wanted to do, so.
Right. Yeah, I don't like when we start to play God, and I feel like that's so often what birth control does, is that it suppresses something that God created to be good.
Yeah.
And I think we override a lot of who we're supposed to be when we play that game.
And it removes the conversation from... Yeah. It's easy to just say, oh, we're not going to talk about when we're going to have kids. We're just going to,
yeah,
I don't know, put that on the back burner.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that people always say, well, if you're doing NFP, you're going to end up with like 10 children. And yeah. At the beginning, I was laughing. I'm like, yeah, because you're just brought so close together as a couple. You're just like, I'm open to life so much. Mm-hmm. But what would you say to someone that doesn't want to like partake in
have 10 NFP? Kids.
Yeah. have. Be natural family planning if they don't want to have a ton of kids. Like,
yeah,
how do we
I think,
just brush that off and say this should not be a concern?
Yeah, I think often it's important to point out that couples who use NFP are inherently more open to life. And they might desire big families from the start of their marriage. That being said, using a natural system really gives you the ability to decide. Maybe if you feel called to have three children, working with your instructor to know those times, it would probably require more abstinence at times, but it is still within the power of the couple to decide how many children to have or not have, with God's will obviously being mm-hmm. discerned throughout the process. Essentially, it works to avoid and it works to achieve, and often couples who use natural systems are just generally more open to having larger families. And they're more apt to have the conversation as to how God is calling their family to grow. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're actually consulting the Lord in some of this, like they are the custodians of, as a couple, they're custodians of life. And it's like maybe life that the Lord desires to bring into the world too.
Yeah.
You know?
That all being said, though, there are super legitimate reasons to avoid a pregnancy, and our family size does not dictate our holiness. And so I think
I love
that's
that.
Like
Say it louder.
The other side of it. And we see that, I mean, a lot, like with couples who are super faithful, maybe experiencing infertility.
Yeah.
That's a hard cross. And then to have other people thinking, oh, well, you're just selfishly not having a child is
yeah.
extremely hurtful. So just squash that now. Holiness does not equal family size.
Yeah, that's great. Shanna, you got questions from the crowd?
That's all I had. We've kind of just covered
We've covered
we
a lot.
Through. So
yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Anecdotally, I have a friend who is the oldest of 13 children. And I think she has said it to me that her mom definitely lived by the motto that a big family is like God's will for your life. And I think she suffered as the oldest of 13. She suffered a lot because by the time she was 8, she had to be mom to all of her siblings. And there was a lot of her childhood that was kind of robbed from her. So I think and having said that too, like I've shared that with other people who are like one of 10 or one of 12. And they're like, I never felt that ever, you know? So it's one of these things, like the Lord has to be part of it. Are we caring and loving our children well to be able to support them? Do we have the financial means? And what I would say too, especially just being in suburban Catholicism, like people think that vacations and nice cars and big homes are part of like a good life. And like, once again, like the greatest gift you can give a child is a sibling. And like, you may be called to sacrifice some of those things so that you can introduce a child into the world. So it's a huge game.
Yeah. There's like two sides to the token. It's like there are very legitimate
yeah.
reasons to avoid a pregnancy, and we don't need to have just baby after baby after baby to be holy.
Yeah.
And then when do we need to be stretched and say, like, should you have another baby? Because
yeah,
so it's totally like both sides. And it's very fluid, and it's why natural family is not contraceptive, because mm-hmm. contraception is not fluid. Contraception is we're not having a baby. But this is an ongoing conversation and ongoing discernment, which is, I'm sure I've only been married for 3.5 years, but I'm sure it's something that changes along that.
Mm-hmm.
We're like in a phase right now where we have young kids and we're growing our family. But once we maybe feel the Lord has called our family to be complete, that conversation probably looks different.
Right.
So it's a fluid thing. And natural family planning is it's really cool because it can be used when it can be used as a single woman just to detect any underlying health concerns. It can be used engaged to learn how to plan a family. It can be used while you're married. It can be used to achieve. It can be used to avoid. And then it also takes on a whole different note when you're postpartum, if you're breastfeeding, after you have a baby, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And then even as we approach menopause, it looks different as well. So that perimenopause time, there are different tools that can be used and seen just by knowing what's going on in our body. So it's beautiful. God made beautiful body, complicated bodies that.
Yeah. And I feel too, and I don't think, I honestly don't think men think about this enough, but like pregnancy is brutal. And so, you know, like you're not just talking about a child, like once it appears out of the womb, you know, but it's like your wife has to be comfortable with the decision to have, you know, a child growing in her for the next 9 months. And that's nothing to
that child.
Exactly. And it's nothing to like, you know, bat your eyes at. So I think it's a,
yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, pregnancy and postpartum are hard. Like it's just a hard time for, especially for a lot of people. So, I mean, emotionally and physically, there's a lot of hormone shifts that cause a lot of things. There's postpartum depression and anxiety. Also, Napro has a great treatment for that.
Really? So
just a little plug.
What's that?
Yeah. They found with a really, really great success that if you get an intramuscular injection of progesterone for like 1 to 5 times, it can greatly help with postpartum depression and anxiety. So if you are experiencing that, something to maybe check out one of your local Napro doctors about.
Wow.
I know.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So it's a hormone deficiency potentially.
Well, it's really like after you're pregnant, and I'm not a physician, so I feel like a little out of my depth here, but after you're pregnant, your hormones drop. Like your progesterone, your estrogen, they're high in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then after you have the baby, they drop very dramatically. And so to ease that transition, you don't necessarily need like progesterone because you need progesterone after you're ovulating. So if you're not ovulating, but the effects of progesterone can help ease that dramatic drop that maybe has caused some of those symptoms.
Hmm.
You have any questions, Alyssa?
Yeah, do you?
I didn't think I was speaking.
You don't have to have any.
I have thoughts, but...
Give us... All right,
I'd love to hear them.
I'm going to share the microphone with Alyssa.
Oh, but on the note of the men thing, my husband is always a big advocate that, like, he likes to do our chart. He likes to know what's going on and how important it is to... Oh, yeah, this is also a separate note. But talking about that holistic component when you're trying to avoid a pregnancy being very important, to engage in all those intimacies when you're not trying to have a baby, but there are other things besides just intercourse. But even when you're trying to achieve a pregnancy, we are still not just our bodies. So engaging in those emotional, intellectual, creative, spiritual things is super important. So we call that SPICE with Creighton. It's an acronym. But
spiritual, physical, intellectual, creative, and emotional.
Yeah, creative and communicative. It's a
spice, spicy couple.
Yeah, a little spice. But to incorporate SPICE in... the trying to avoid times and the trying to achieve times. I know it's a little cheesy.
Natural family planning is the spice of life.
Exactly. They would love that, you know, a cheesy tagline.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tell us.
But it might sound cheesy, but it's not cheesy in practice. That's always what I tell my couples. It's like, this is a cheesy acronym, but this is real important things to be incorporating into your marriage.
Totally. So.
I wasn't supposed to be on this podcast. I was just here because when Father Andrew and Shayna were planning it and said we're going to be talking about NFP, I wanted a seat at the table just to observe. But yeah, my whole mindset like going into this is just, this is just good data analytics, like truly. And that's sort of where my mindset goes naturally. But you talk about like, in order to make good decisions, you have to know how you have to be able to see patterns and like be able to make decisions based on the patterns that you observe. It just so happens that with NFP, the thing that is being observed is yourself, which is so cool. And like, in order to grow in holiness, all the saints say this, in order to grow in holiness, you have to know yourself. And that's not just like a spiritual thing. It's actually like how my physical body, interplays with the spiritual life, and and transparency. I don't chart, but I know certain things about myself based on which time of the month it is, right? And there are certain spiritual realities that I have to like overcome at certain times versus at other times. And I think for couples, like talking about these spice things, whatever, my mindset with contracepting is that it's just sort of like a thing of convenience. And this might sound derogatory, and I don't mean it to be that way, because I know we all, like those that use contraception or birth control, use it for very different reasons. But it seems to me that it's something out of convenience, that like my body is a one big question mark that I can't really control or have any knowledge of. And so I would rather just suppress these things and kind of level out how I react in certain situations. And I think for women, that's so dangerous, because we are feminine and we are like able to receive at greater points and able to give at greater points emotionally, physically, intellectually, right? And that provides something to the world that men who don't experience these spikes in hormones or cyclical nature of our personalities or whatever, like they can't provide that to the world. And so by no means am I saying that, like, if you're on birth control, you're manly or masculine. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But I just think it, yeah. And to think that young girls are being told, like this lie that in order to be healthy and like regular and to know yourself, you have to suppress all these things. I think is sort of an injustice to like how capable we are of being able to know who we are. So yes. Those are just my thoughts. I don't really have completely. A question, but
yeah. Oh yeah, totally. It's like knowledge is power, and it's a beautiful thing the way we were designed. And so to know and to be able to work with God in that is mm-hmm. amazing mm-hmm. and super underrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think if I had one question, I know many Catholic couples or Catholic people who I admire who, are, yeah, at some point preparing for marriage or whatever that looks like. And they, maybe just because a lack of understanding of NFP or whatever that looks like, would be like sexually active or contracepting before marriage. But then they have this sort of understanding that like, once we get married, NFP is like, we're going to be married in the church, and NFP is how we, do life once we're married.
Mm-hmm.
And that has never made sense to me. like we're going to contracept until we're married. And then once we're married, we'll do NFP. But so I don't know if there's a question in there, but like what would you say to couples who are sort of have that mindset that like it's only once we're married?
It's kind of like chastity is, we're called to chastity at all different times of life. And chastity looks different when we're engaged mm-hmm. or dating versus when we're married. And it's like, if we're abstaining, waiting till marriage to have intercourse, then naturally NFP flows from that. That being said, chastity is a difficult virtue. And so I would say like praying with your significant other, and then seeking that counsel if needed from a priest, going to confession, frequent reception of the sacraments, all those things are going to help you to grow in chastity.
Yeah.
And natural family planning is really just like a natural outgrowth of chastity. It's a way we practice chastity in marriage.
Yeah. And again, with the eighth graders, like I thought
this was so good. I heard about it too.
I taught them chastity, and they all think chastity means abstinence. Like, well, you can't have sex. I said, well, no. Like, you practice chastity in all forms of life. So I said, what does chastity look like for me? And then they go, well, you can't have sex.
True.
Which is true. Which is absolutely true. But I told them it's not just not having sex. It's a certain way that I love that's different than a married couple. Like, my I'm like literally more available to more people and to help. I'm just more free. I don't have to worry about children, so that I can consult with people who have issues. I've got to plan a funeral with people who are mourning. Like, I'm just, it's a certain way that I love. And chastity for a couple that isn't married looks different than a couple that is married. And
I think people forget that chastity continues when you're married. So it's like, yeah, to an eighth grader, chastity is abstinence.
Yeah, it is.
But when you're married, chastity looks like something different.
Right. It's a certain way that you're called to love. And like, yeah, for people who aren't married, you're still in testing these waters, because a baby is a permanent thing that deserves a permanent structure of family life. And that's why we avoid sexual genital contact.
Genital contact.
Thank you. Yeah, just sex before marriage. It's a certain way that you love and reverence the other person.
Yeah. And I heard in this I'll give a shout out, the Hormone Genius podcast, it talks about a lot of things NAPRO and women's hormones. So I highly recommend it. Basically, it talks exactly to what you were saying, Alyssa, just like how at different times of the month, we have different things going on in our bodies, emotionally, physically, etc. But they talk about specifically just the reverence and the holiness of the moment of conception and just how natural family planning preserves that holiness. This is a really cool thing that we talk about in the intro session for the Creighton model. But there was a study done at Northwestern University in 2016 that at the moment the sperm and the egg, like the sperm penetrates the outer membrane of the egg, the moment of conception, there's a spark of life. Like it turns yellow. It's an interaction of the zinc components, but they've dubbed it the spark of life. So literally at that moment where we go from one cell to then many cells very quickly, there's a spark, and there's such a holiness in that moment where God knows, I mean, before that he knows, but like the soul that's created in that moment, it's just a really beautiful thing. And natural family planning preserves that moment to be all the holiness and goodness that God desires it to be.
Wow. That's really special.
They said it like, I really can't take credit because they put it into like really beautiful words. And I was like, whoa, that is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think like married couples are co-creators, and that creating that new life with God is just, it's something to be reverenced.
Yeah. Well, shucks, I'll give you two things to kind of end on. Last thoughts about your pitch to people for NFP. And then, I would want to hear, if somebody was looking to find resources, where would they go?
Yeah. I'll do the resources first, I guess. Resources, the Archdiocesan Office of Natural Family Planning has every method that we offer and how to find an introductory class. And again, I really encourage / support, like go to the introductory session that you think will work best for you. Do a little pre-research. We don't want anyone to be in a method that's not going to work for them because they don't like doing this, that, or the other. Like be in a method that works for you. So the Archdiocesan website has lots of information about what methods are out there, how to contact those people to go to introductory sessions. I really love the Hormone Genius podcast for just women in general. It's a nurse practitioner and then a instructor like myself, and they talk about and they interview different people, and they just talk about the beauty of the feminine design and what that looks like in hormones. I think that's a really cool resource. Like those are kind of just some of the like really logistical resources, but instructors talking to people who use methods, like what's your lived experience and then versus like, how does it practically look?
Well, there's a question that I kind of run up against is, you know, like I'll ask, because I know in this diocese, we have a number of OBGYNs, and I have a short list of like four or five people in my mind that I'm thinking about who are versed in NAPRO, right? And I generally speaking would trust them more than somebody who isn't, you know, but then their demand is, they can only do so much. So like, can you just have whatever OB?
Yeah, I mean, you can. I can't speak to how receptive they will be to you using a natural system. I have friends who use natural family planning and go to, for lack of a better word, secular OBGYNs. Mm-hmm. That being said, some people do have bad experiences of like the doctor being dismissive to that or saying like, oh, I'll see you right back here because you're going to be pregnant again. Mm. And that's just not true. And so we are very fortunate here. We have multiple OBGYNs who are of the mind of they don't prescribe contraception and that natural family planning is legitimate. That being said, if you can advocate for yourself and you know your doctor is respectful of your wishes and respectful of you as a person who can make healthcare decisions, then you're fine. You just have to be, You just have to know your arguments.
But once again, that's tough. I mean, like what Shana was saying is that, you know, if you're experiencing infertility, your doctor is the expert. So when they say, you know, we should probably go the IVF route, if you aren't versed, it's going to be really easy to say, well, I guess we won't conceive naturally. So this is what we have to do.
Yeah. And in that regard, we just need to like get the word out that this exists because it is an option and it's an alternative and it's more effective and less costly almost always. So it's on a practical note and it's much more inherently pro-life in no embryos being destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, we have a lot of resources here if you're experiencing infertility. I know the Archdiocese has a ministry called Enkindle. They do a monthly rosary just to pray for couples. We have, yeah, just a lot of resources. Our Archdiocese is very supportive of NFP and it's a really good, beautiful thing. So as far as resources go, and then why you should do NFP, is that the question?
Yeah.
Well, NFP is, I would say maybe it's like threefold, my main reasons. Number one, as a woman, it's important to know your body, to know how God made you, to harness that information, to be able to advocate for yourself, to know what's going on in your body, and to treat anything that's not right. I just think that is empowering as a woman to be able to know your body. Mm-hmm. Number two, and that would be for any woman, single, married, otherwise, I would say for using it for family planning, the ability to communicate with your spouse is unparalleled when you have to talk about this on a daily, if not more often, basis. To be able to communicate and to be vulnerable with them, and which will allow for special intimacies to be had that would not otherwise be there. And as I said, all the spice components. Mm-hmm. The acronym to make it less jumbly with your words. But I think, yeah, the communication is unparalleled. And then, of course, just that openness and discernment constantly with God to help plan your family, to know, like, what are we called to now? And that it might not be easy. It's not easy to avoid a pregnancy. It's not easy necessarily to have a pregnancy. So I always like to point out, like, not to sugarcoat that NFP is like, oh, you have to abstain 3 days in the month. That's not true. You do have to abstain more. And it is a hard thing. Mm-hmm. It is a cross. NFP is a cross. But to embrace it and to be able to grow in the virtues that it encourages with your spouse is a really beautiful thing. So it's hard, but beautiful. I don't like to like do the commercial like, oh, you never have to abstain, because that's not true. You do have to abstain, but it's worth it and it's worthwhile and it's worth pursuing and it really helps to grow in holiness. So
I love it. Thank you, Allie.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Thank you for your witness. Thank you for your bright spirit. It's always so much fun to be with you. Sparks of life.
We are on 3%, so we have to hustle if we're going to do sparks.
All right, folks, we are just
going to... Is that what you guys call it?
At the end, we normally we do little sparks because we're the Catholic arsonists, so what's going to spark?
Wow, that was very timely. I didn't know about that.
The spark of conception is my spark.
That's not mine.
What's your spark, Shana?
I don't know.
Okay.
She said she doesn't know one.
Listen, we're on 3%, and we're worried that the computer's going to die. So, Allie...
Sorry.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I loved being here.
And we're going to pray for you and pray for your family and that the Lord continue to fill literally every one of your desires.
Thank you. Amen. The Lord is very good, obviously.
All righty. We'll see you next time.